This is the Financial Coconut Podcast, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. My name's Rakesh, and together with Anthony, we scour the net to find worthy financial news and derive insights for all you coconuts. We are part-time investors with an intense full-time career. If we can do it, you can too. So join us every Wednesday for TFC's Weekly Market Updates. Hello, coconuts. Welcome to another episode of Weekly Market Updates, where we scour the net to find worthy financial news for you. This week, we are quite varied in our episode. We're going to start off with a tech overview. Alphabet, Amazon, and Apple had their earnings call. We're going to dive a little deeper into Apple with a bit more news there. We then move into Singapore REITs, the CapitaLand Integrated Commercial Trust. Why should you look into it? Should we even look into it? What are some upsides? What are some downsides over there? And last but not least, Shell has recorded record profits. Was this a good thing? How did they do that? Is this a buy now? Is it up and up for Shell? All these questions answered in this episode. Let's get to it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, coconuts. Welcome to another weekly episode with me, Rakesh.
And Anthony, one more week to Valentine's Day. I mean, I don't know if you celebrate it. I kind of feel like an old married couple, yeah. And I don't. Yes.
Fair enough, man. No, I try and stay home on Valentine's Day, actually.
I mean, I try to stay home every day. So yeah. That's slightly different. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy, man. I thought it was due in January, but we are really coming out to mid-Feb now. It's been an intense...
No, month. Not mid-Feb, like 7th. It's 7th. Next week is mid-Feb.
Well, it's one quarter of mid-Feb. It's one quarter of Feb, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it's been an intense month, man. The markets has just been... you know, do you feel FOMO yet? Have you started buying?
Yeah, definitely feeling FOMO, dude. No, I have not started buying. It's I guess I would say FOMO because I should have gone in. But I haven't.
And I'll be honest. Laugh at me.
I've been lazy. I know. I will be honest that I've been lazy. As you know, Anthony, I've also just recently just started up IBKR. You were helping me out with that referral.
Yep.
But I just haven't put the funds in to spend. So then every weekend.
That's why I don't have a referral bonus yet.
There you go. Every weekend I haven't. You know, I've got some wedding to go to Wow, shit. So. Yeah, dedicating some time soon.
Going to the wedding has now cost you real money, right? But
it's still costing me real money. You must give ang pao.
It's not even ang pao. Now you cannot even invest in stocks. It's terrible. Opportunity cost, bro.
Yeah, man. Real opportunity cost.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think that's roughly it. Yeah, Valentine's Day, you have anything planned?
No. I mean, not at all. I just don't go out. Stay at home. No, look at my two kids go, the fruits of Valentine's Day. No, not really. But look at two kids and go, damn it, no more celebrations. Need to like put them to bed. So, nope.
Fair enough, man. I think on my side, me and my wife agreed, no going on Valentine's Day because they'll have some buffet here, buffet there.
Yeah, they always hike up the price. The day after, the day before.
Mm. 1 week after also can.
That's why. Never also can.
Yeah, like you, right?
Terrible.
Lucky my Thank God our wives don't listen to this. Jinx. Awesome, coconuts. Now that we've established that we are the only people that listen to our own podcasts, we have a couple of updates for you. As usual, the three stories. We've been a bit back and forth with Singapore a bit. Yep. But we're going back to the US with tech. We're going to do a quick overview on tech and talk a little bit about Apple. Then we come back to Singapore with CapitaLand Trust. And that's a REITs, right, Anthony?
Yeah. All right. Yep.
And of course, last but not least, we're going to end off with Shell having record profits.
All right.
Okay.
Not thanks to me pumping petrol, but yes.
Thanks to everybody.
All of them had record profits. It's terrible.
Yes, yes. I think firstly, as a quick shout out before we jump into tech, I think tech has been hit quite hard over the last couple of weeks. Somehow every tech company is laying off 7%. If you are affected, we feel you. We empathize. We hope for you to get another job. And if you need any questions or anything that we can do to help, please write to us. We're more than happy to have that chat as well.
Cool.
Awesome. So on that note, good to talk about it, right? Because I think Alphabet, Amazon, and Apple release earnings last week.
Yeah, I think and Microsoft Meta as well. Oh, that's really mama now. Mm.
Yeah, it's actually
AMA, actually. Yeah.
Yes, today we focus on the A's.
Today we focus on the A's.
Alphabet, well, it's honestly been a bit of a not a very good year for them, right? Like, they let go of people, obviously, but also their ad sales has fallen quite a bit. I think YouTube mentioned below 8 billion, falling short, obviously, of forecasting and all that. And they are actually... Sundar Pichai came out to say they're focusing a lot more on AI. They're looking at different ways to search, ad revenue as well. They're looking at a way to re-engineer how this would look like in the form of sustainable growth, right? He's obviously talked a lot about efficiency since, three quarters now? 20% of his sales force, he says he needs to optimize. Oh, everyone did. I know. That's why I say this tech overview. I say once, everything said that. Everyone said that. Got party line. Hey, I was seriously thinking, like, you know how in the last last 2 weeks, everyone somehow with the 7% number has been quite apparent in tech, right? With the exception of maybe Workato, they got rid of 10%. I'm wondering whether all these CEOs literally got WhatsApp to each other. Hey, bro, today I do first, tomorrow you do.
One person do, everybody follow. Right? Because the first person start with 10%. I think the first people started with 10%. It's like, very jalat. Must go a bit lower. Then 8. Then some people went 6, actually not enough. So 7 lah.
Trial and error.
Wow. I mean, you look, it's just market reaction, right? I think some of those companies went 6 and then people were like, why only 6? What's the point? So okay lor, you know, lucky 7. Not so lucky for the people who got affected, unfortunately, but different shareholders perspective.
Absolutely right. But I mean, the shareholders loved it. As soon as people, you know, as soon as the tech companies started saying that the stocks, if you looked at it, skyrocketed, went up, at least jumped. Anyway, coming back to this. So that was effectively what Alphabet is saying. Obviously, it has fallen. Amazon, same thing. It said cloud business has slowed. I think quite a hit was taken on AWS.
By slow, they just mean slowing growth, right? So it still grew 20-something percent year on year.
Yes.
It's just no longer growing like 30-something, 40%. Yeah.
Yes. And he said the standard party line, we need to be more efficient. But I think the biggest one here is Apple, right? They've had a lot of
because they haven't fired people. They are the only one that
actually.
They are the only one that haven't announced layoffs of all the big tech.
You're right, actually. They have not actually announced. And that can be seen in their December figures.
Yeah.
What is it? -5% in terms of sales deceleration. And of course, they blamed it on logistics. They said that supply chain was affected and so on. But actually, I believe, a few other articles were also saying that it's more than just a supply thing, right? Yep. Because... it's real for us as you know, investors and retail, that they're actually not buying these phones, right? iPhones and so on. So I think that's definitely something to be thinking about as we move into Q1 for Apple and really wanting to see how they're going to go ahead and hit their numbers. Because don't forget, iPhone takes up quite, I think, was it 50% of their entire revenue, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that it's said, the bulk of it.
It is the bulk of it. And that's why I think for the last few years, they've been trying to grow the services sector. right? If you notice with all their different subscriptions that they're trying to have.
Yeah, with all their messaging around privacy and tracking, and cutting people out of their walled garden.
Wow, shots fired.
I mean, look, they are doing what they have power over the ecosystem. They are, you know, flexing their power to make more profits. Good for them, lah, you know. And everybody who owns the index owns quite a bit of Apple, right? It's the largest company. So good for everybody who owns the index, which is like everybody. So hooray.
Yeah, true. A bit of numbers on Apple, right? Revenue fell 5%. iPhone sales declined 8%. I think that's the worst ever iPhone sales they've had in a very long time. But they did have some positive news coming out, which I think is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Number one, they have apparently, according to them, their install base comprises of 2 billion devices.
Okay.
That's billion with a B, right? Yeah. So that's at an all-time high. People are keeping it. So they have a decent retention figure in that sense, if you look at devices. Not to mention their margins run at 40-something% when they're purchasing those devices. Mm-hmm. And they have been actually improving their services number. So it's somewhere around 150 million more that they had from last year with regards to the number of paid subscribers on their services.
Oh, wow.
That's actually quite a fair bit. It topped out actually at 937 million users.
That is a lot of people.
That is quite a bit. And this is the area that they've been trying to grow. I mean, we've talked about this when they first launched. I believe, Anthony, you and I last year that were talking about how they created this one subscription system or something like this. Right.
Well, and, not one ring to rule them all, but, you know, close.
Yeah, and somewhere along those lines. And it turns out that it's actually paying off in that sense that they have 935 million users in that front. So I think that's a really good positive note. It's good to see how this year is going to be priced because every year they release their Macs, every year they release their iPhones, every year they release their watches, right? So I think it's good to see what the market sentiment is. What are your thoughts on the hardware devices here for Apple?
I don't know. I mean, I think they probably haven't fired people because they didn't grow that much over the last 2 years. I mean, you think about all the other big tech names, right? You know, Amazon had the logistics boom and, you know, e-commerce during COVID and AWS, Alphabet, it was just going gangbusters over the pandemic and their Google Cloud boom as well, same as Microsoft. So all of them kind of went, oh yeah, we have growth above trend that's higher and try to maintain the trend and failed. Therefore, they are cutting people off. Apple didn't have any of that. All they had was, oh, China factory might be shutting down. We need to manage supply chain. We need to sell more iPhones, right? So maybe the joys of being hardware focused more than SaaS. In that sense, right, which means that they didn't grow as much over COVID, but similarly, you know, now that people have come down from that growth high, they don't need to cut as much. And on hardware, I mean, I'm just quite intrigued to see where this goes, right? I mean, every single time you think, I think at least, hey, you know, how many more iPhones can they sell, right? Or how much more incremental value can they put into a phone and squeeze out another round of upgrades from the consumer, you know? And every year it gets more and more expensive. So, how much more can they keep this wheel turning? And it seems like they can. So, good for them.
Yeah. Actually, the one that surprises me the most is the overlaps they have on their devices, right? Like, honestly, the iPad mini to an iPhone that is quite massive as it is, and the iPad to the Mac, like, there's quite a lot of overlap if you think about it. But people seem to be having all of these devices.
Why? Why do this? I don't understand.
It's a question coming from me also. Yeah.
So I don't, I have two laptops because I have a work laptop and a personal laptop and none of them are Mac. Mm. But, you know, I mean, it's just like sometimes I just don't understand. And if I think about this, Apple has been great, you know, and they have been really good at executing. But what is the next big innovation, right? Or what real innovation have they made besides making phones smaller and, you know, changing a bit of the hardware inside, all that, which are all great, which are all fantastic achievements. But, you know, we have heard about the Apple car for the longest time, hasn't appeared. We have heard about Apple Those VR for the longest rumors, time,
right?
Yeah. Haven't appeared, right? What's the revolutionary hardware or revolutionary product that they are going to release? Or are they just going to say, well, you know what, I'm going to keep my hardware edge and I'm going to turn really more into a services company by selling subscriptions, by selling ads and all that, because I have the walled garden, I have the ecosystem, I have the power there. This is what I'm going to do, is higher margin. You know, I'm just going to start milking the cow harder, right? Rather than trying to find another cow. Yeah. So I think that to me is the really, really, you know, big picture and long-term thing, right? Whether, you know, what's their strategy? What are they going to do? And that to me is always the big question mark with Apple, because, you know, and we have seen this throughout history, right? You squeeze the cow for too long, it just dies, you know? So I think that's going to be the issue.
That's a fair point. People have been saying this since Tim Cook took the helm, right?
And they've been proven wrong for the last 10 years. So, you know,
yeah.
Yes.
And they've been milking. And
they're finding new ways to milk, right? They find a new machine to milk the cow harder.
I would say the closest latest investment or latest idea would have been the watch. And that's it.
Yeah.
Right. Really, it's not to the level where Steve Jobs was. But are they going to come up with the VR? Are they going to come up with a car, right? Or I think they were talking about glasses or something like that. I really don't know. It's yet to see, but from the looks of things, exactly what you said, it could become one other revenue stream, which is services. Maybe they want that to take up 30% of their revenue, 30% on hardware, and the other 30% on maybe some sort of software. I don't know. Right. So I think those are questions to have, but without a doubt, I think Apple's brand is the reason they exist. That's the reason I believe people buy all of these different devices. It's a little bit of a cult following. Hey, have you gotten the new iPad?
Yeah.
And those sort of things, lah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what Tesla aspires to be, right? So, you know, fair enough. And by all accounts, their ecosystem is great. I mean, the only Apple device I have is my work phone, which I try not to use. So can't say too much about it. See, my boss also doesn't listen to this podcast. Very good. But yeah, I mean that's pretty much about it, right? So, you know, it's that to me is always that, you know, $1 trillion question, because that's how big they are now. How long can they keep doing this? Do they really just want to become a services company and maybe one day that ends, maybe, you know, after Tim Cook goes, they have their Steve Ballmer equivalent and the whole company just kind of shrivels a bit until the next generation, right? You don't know. Nothing lasts forever. So yeah, we'll see. But I mean, recent quarter, very good news. Not much headwinds going forward. But maybe a bit of logistics, a bit of over-reliance on China and how that works out in the new geopolitical space. But again, they'll take years. So, you know, they'll start trying to shift supply chains and it'll be okay. So, yeah.
And they were actually the least affected in the form of tech stock drop, right? Because like Amazon, Alphabet dropped a bit. But Apple actually saw negligent drop. I think it's at 151.
Yeah.
The last time I saw it.
I think they dropped to close to 100 before, something like that. Like in the last 2-3 months, I haven't actually taken a look at Apple, because it's just I own Nasdaq, right? So don't really care about Apple. That's all the exposure I need. I don't want anymore. I like Meta. Hey, if you bought Meta at the lows, you'll be like 70% up.
True.
And lows was 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Yeah. Right, Apple, amazing. I think for coconuts out there, they dropped to 125 early Jan. It's now at 151, 6th Feb. So 1 month, they've jumped from 125 to 151.
Oh, very nice.
It's not bad.
Not bad.
Cool. That's a little bit on tech. We haven't been talking about tech a lot. So hopefully, listeners, you kind of like that. Let us know if there's anything else that you want us to cover.
We should talk more about REITs. Actually, no, not really.
Well, we're just about to talk about REITs, Anthony.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We talked about it last week. We'll talk about it this week. Tell us a little bit about this Capital and REIT.
Yeah, I mean, REITs just don't have that much news, right? Unlike the US companies, they report once every 6 months. So every 6 months, we might talk about them. And they all report together. So you know, we can't spread it into that many market updates episodes. So CICT, which is CapitaLand Integrated Commercial Trust, had earnings last week. Yeah, last week, not early this week. You know, and they're kind of interesting, I think, for a few reasons. One is, you know, history. They were Singapore's first REIT that was listed in 2002. And they are Singapore's largest REIT. I think they have like 2.4 billion something in properties, right? And they are almost like 90% Singapore properties. So it's like shopping malls, you know, Plaza Sing, Bugis Junction, office buildings like Asia Square, Capital Green, Capital Sky, like the quite landmark buildings, right, around Singapore. So it's like, hey, you know, I know these names. Let's check it out. So that's pretty much the only reason why. And because I own their shares. So it's kind of interesting to look at it. Yeah. So earnings-wise, you know, I mean, unlike tech and like a REIT, they actually went up in revenue, right? Unlike all these big tech companies, you know, making less and less revenue per quarter. This one made more revenue, up 10% a year.
Is it because rent went up? Okay.
Yeah, of course. That's the only way they make money, right? Rent went up, therefore I collect more money. and then bought more buildings, therefore I collect more money. Right? It's very, very simple business model. Don't need to worry about services, hardware, software, all these things. Doesn't matter. they are all hardware. Distributable income up 4.8%, DPU up 2.7%. So, you know, generally growth across the board, top line, bottom line, that's great. The total 2022 distributions was 10.5 cents, which at today's price, $2 and a bit, is about 5% yield, which is not too bad. I mean, it's higher than T-bills, higher than SSB. So, you know, you're kind of being a bit compensated for it, and higher than CPF, right? So you're being compensated for that risk. Okay. You know, operating metrics wise, again, all very decent. Leverage ratio is 40%, nowhere near 50. Their debt is 80% of the debt is fixed rate. So higher interest rate, low interest rate, they don't really care. Their cost of debt is at 2.7% at fixed. So that's great. You know, so it's very cheap.
Let's dive deeper around this, right? Because I think most people, when they talk about REIT, they might have some issue with leverage, right?
Yeah.
And just really want them to understand a little bit here. In the norm, is 40% leverage normal when you go for a REIT? Do you think it's more? Do you think it's less?
I think it's about there in terms of market standards. And I mean, you think about it differently, right? When you buy your house, your residential property, you pay 25% down payment, you 75% loan, right? So your leverage is 75%.
Exactly.
Right? So 40% is half of that. I think that's one way to look at it. Two is really kind of regulatory based in the sense that, you know, in Singapore, your REITs cannot be levered more than 50%. So that's a red line there.
I see. Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Which means that, you know, if you go above 50%, people start knocking on your doors and, you know, that SGS starts knocking on your doors and starts you to kind of lower it, right?
Okay.
So there's a red line there that cannot be crossed. And, well, because banks or lenders tend not to be too silly, they go, hey, regulatory, you have 50%. I'm lending you money. I want to know early before you hit that 50%, right? I don't want to know only when you make SGS announcement. So they tend to have restrictions that once you hit 45 or once you hit like 48%, you have to, it's kind of like a mandatory prepayment event or event of default under the loan, where, you know, so if you hit that line, you have to tell lenders can call the loan back to reduce leverage, and that's a way to protect the lenders to get their money back first before everybody else gets hit.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, 40% is good. If they have a low cost of debt, if they are not going to take on new buildings and all that, that'll be fine. I think that the fear is once you hit like 42-43%, you are kind of limited in growth prospects, right? Because you can't buy a new building, they'll take on too much debt, they'll push your gearing too far. And if you do want to buy that new building, it means that you can't take on debt, you take on equity, you do rights issues, you dilute existing shareholders and all of that to fund that purchase, which is normally seen as not a good thing. Right. So I think that's where leverage comes in. It kind of gives you a signal. It's not really a signal of default because these people probably won't default, but it's a signal of, you know, are you going to get diluted soon? Will they need more money from equity? In which case you'll get diluted. I think that's really the key concern around leverage.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I think just good to understand a little bit more in terms of that, right? Because we only hear 75% or 80% or anything like that.
Yeah, so 40% is quite decent. I think last time we were talking about Parkway went to 30-something%, which is quite low, 35-something. Yeah, so it just bounces around that range. I mean, if a REIT came to say, you know, I have 0% debt, you'll be asking questions of them like, hey, why are you not levering up a bit to juice your returns, right?
Correct.
You should be juicing your returns because you're renting your buildings at 6%. You should take on some debt, maybe 35%, at 4%. Cost, and then the return on equity is higher, and therefore the return on shareholders is higher. Right, so debt is not a bad thing. Debt helps give shareholders greater returns. REITs have a natural ceiling on debt due to their leverage requirements. Right, so hey, you know, I think it's relatively safe. The big concern really is around dilution. Of course, REITs go bankrupt and all that, but if it's, you know, CICT, that's not going to happen, right? If it's the small ones, fly-by-night ones, maybe. That's why they pay you 10% yield and not 5%.
Take on the risk.
I think you take on the risk, right? That's really about it.
Yeah. So, okay, understand the debt side of things. Now, the other side, obviously, is rental. So how has the commercial trust been in terms of rental over the last couple of years?
Rent went up last year, surprisingly. So I think retail malls went up, like they call it what, rental reversion, right? Which is really how you compare the rents. So they had positive rental reversion. In the malls, it was up 1.7%. In the offices, it was up, I think, 8%, something like that. So, you know, I mean, not Singapore condo increase 30-40% kind, but, you know, on a billion dollars, it's not too bad. I don't know why these people rent, you know. Like, if my rent increased 100%, it would be bloody expensive. I don't know how these people increase 100%. I think my rent would probably go up 30%. But yeah.
So rent went up. Yeah, rent went up, right? 8% or whatever it is. But what about occupancy, right? Were people actually renting from these guys?
So overall, their entire portfolio, which is like a lot of buildings in Singapore and a few overseas, was about nearly 96% occupancy. Right?
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, to me, that actually feels a bit low. If you go to like, you know, the industrial REITs, or if you go to some of the office REITs, they used to be like 98-99% occupancy. So 95-96 feels a bit low to me. I mean, they own a lot of office buildings, right? So partially there's maybe a bit of like, you know, the work from office, work from home kind of tension playing out, people returning office space over the last few years, or renting somewhere cheaper.
So Anthony, you know, we talked about all of this, but, you know, do you think there is a way that, you know, companies are trying to cut costs and therefore, you know, kind of give up the lease and say, you know what, I'm going to take less space in the Capital Tower or wherever it was?
Yeah, I think there's Capital Tower is a different building, not owned by the REIT, I think, in Tanjung Pagar. But anyway,
oh shit! Yeah, you're right. Okay,
in their
commercial buildings.
Yeah, in their commercial buildings. But I think, you know, that there's probably two ways that we will kind of see. Well, there's two competing tensions, right? One is, you know, if you're a company, you want to rationalize costs and all that because you're scared of recession. Yes. But if you have, you know, 3 years left on a lease, for example, you're not going to cut it down now, right? Because to terminate now means that you have to pay penalties and all of that. Might not be worth it, you know? So you might just hang on for the next 3 years and, hey, fire people lah. The second, and I think this will probably win out, is you see people making you see employers making employees come back to the office, right? Now, everybody see recession coming, scared of job. Maybe last year, I felt I didn't need so much office space because nobody comes in the office anyway. But now, now everybody's scared of job, I can make them return, which is why I moved to the office more, right? I take the MRT. But you know, I can make a return. Suddenly, my use of office space as an employer is much better because I see people in the office. So, I don't really need to return anymore. In fact, if we want to grow, we might want to get a bigger office space, right?
Gotcha.
So, you know, I think people who would have wanted to change would have changed the last few years when there was a lot of space out in the market. When especially when their leases were up, people this year who want to change will be those with their lease up. And I think what is relatively interesting is, in REITs, there's this thing called WALE, which is like the weighted average lease expiry. So across the entire portfolio, based on their lot size or property size or office size, what is the term to the expiry of the lease? And for CICT, I think it's 3.9, nearly 4 years. So, there's a lot of committed occupancy and they are all committed for a relatively long period of time. Gotcha. 3 to 4 years is not super long, but
These are things that we have to look at, right? Obviously, when you're trying to look at a REIT and looking to invest.
Yeah, so to see, the fear is real, right? You don't want this year occupancy 96%, next year 40%. How are you going to make money? Right? So you want to know that, okay, fine, my major tenants will be here for longer, So even if it goes, at most it goes down to 92%, it's okay lah. I won't lose too much money.
Fair enough. Got you. So, in this case, everything is looking quite positive for CICT. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts in 2023 then?
I don't know. I mean, I like REITs, right? And I'm a shareholder, so I'm biased. I think there's...
Buying more.
not buying more. But I think it's not one of those things where you go, oh yeah, this is overpriced. I think there's nothing obviously wrong about it. I think the biggest risk to me is that they are really, really concentrated in Singapore. Most of their offices, most of the malls are in Singapore. Maybe they're good properties, a lot of the regional malls and all that. But at the end of the day, this just means that they are kind of a proxy for the Singapore economy. If we stop getting, if our unemployment goes up very high, for example, or if we really go into a very deep recession, all these things will suffer. And maybe that's the time to buy because they'll recover and it'll recover and it'll come back like we saw in COVID. But if it doesn't and this is a really, really bad recession for the next decade, then this will be a bad stock to be in. But then again, a lot of stocks will be bad stocks to be in. So it's not a bear case that's specific to this REIT. So I think it's relatively good value, not great. If something goes wrong, you are kind of buffered off by a decent yield. If something goes right, your upside won't be great, but you'll pay your 5% a year. Good enough. Lah.
Yeah, true. Cool.
Or you can market time and wait for recession, then you buy. Right.
Provided we hit Singapore, right? Specifically.
How do not hit? I think we'll come.
True. Yeah. We're market takers. We're not setters anyways.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Let's move on to our last story.
All right.
The big guys.
Sorry. The bad guys. Before we get there, I must say Bed Bath & Beyond is crazy, right? They went up 96% yesterday. And today, 5 minutes after open, they are down 45%.
Wow.
It's hilarious. The meme stocks are fucking funny. But okay, back to more prosaic things like Shell.
Clearly, Coconuts, you can see that we are, even while talking, we're looking at the stocks. So it's...
I'm just scrolling through Tiger, who haven't sponsored us. NVIDIA has 200 not bucks. Yet. What the hell? We need to sell NVIDIA. This is crazy. How can it be worth so much? we'll talk about that another day. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Shell's great. I love Shell. Yeah. It was really interesting, I think. So Shell again had their earnings. You know. Yeah. We are really branching out from like tech earnings now. They announced a record annual profit of almost 40 billion dollars. Over the year, and this was their record profit, highest ever profit, right? So their previous highest was I think 28 billion in 2008. So they beat it by like, oh my god, 40%, 30%,
quite a bit,
40 plus percent. Jeez. Right, last year was just billion. A blowout, right? Their last quarter earnings was 9.8 billion, so that's fantastic. And you know, I think maybe a bit of a dose of reality is that they, you know, we were talking about Shell, I think many, many months ago, and a possible spin-off of their renewables business. But their renewables is really, really small. It's not small, but it's like less than 5% of the entire group's profits. So 40 billion, less than 2 billion in profits, right? In terms of CapEx, pure capital expenditure is also the smallest part of the group. So, you know, it's growing, but it's not growing as fast as the rest of the business, which is not a good thing for greening the economy, lah. But, I mean, I have my own thoughts on that.
These guys are just going to worry about these stakeholders, so.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not a bad thing, right? You earn a lot of cash and you return all your cash to your shareholders. If your shareholders want to invest in green companies, they can go buy green companies, right? If your shareholders don't believe in green companies, then they don't buy green companies. They go and buy Occidental Petroleum or they go and buy some other oil stock, right? So, or they buy EQT, LNG stock. So, you know, I think... like there is a case to be made that you don't need every company to be everything. There are lots of green infrastructure companies out there. Look at Adani, right? Well, not really green, but well, look at Adani and they're short selling. Right? I kept wanting to talk about that. I just couldn't tie it into something that we could show. Right? We did that. A lot of thoughts. Just send us a message. We'll rant at you about Adani. But anyway, back to Shell. And to be fair to them, that's what they've been doing, right? Last year, they returned, 26 billion to shareholders, right? 8 billion, I think, in dividends and 18 billion in stock buybacks. So that's a lot of stock buybacks.
Wow.
Part of it was because they divested a big chunk of assets in the US, but they are not reducing their pace this year. For now, I mean, for the first quarter of 2023, they announced another $4 billion in share buybacks. So they are just, you know, really, and they really see this as, I think, their value to shareholders. We are going to make a lot of cash because we are a mature business and we'll return that cash to you. And you spend it as you see fit essentially. Because what's their market cap actually? Oh, let's go figure out their market cap. But yeah, I think that's kind of the interesting bits of the Shell earnings to me. They are still an energy company, but you know.
Got it. Yeah, I think for me the share buybacks are always a good question, right? Like usually you see that as a voice of confidence from the government from the you know, Shell in this case, from the Treasury, from the board, whoever you want to call that from. Because they feel that there's no better investment than in themselves. They could have easily put that in a REIT. They could have easily put that in, you know, other things. But sometimes do you feel that they buy this to inflate the price?
No, I mean, the whole point of a share buyback is to inflate the price, right? Because what you're doing in a share buyback is to essentially take it off the market. So your share count falls. Well, if your value of the company hasn't changed, so let's say it was $1 million with 1 million shares, therefore $1 a share. If you buy back 500,000 shares, you still have $1 million of value with 500,000 shares. So, you know, your shares should now be worth $2, right? So it is a way to push up share price without, and that's why it's called a return of value to shareholders, because you are pushing up the shareholder share price without actually, you know, giving them dividends. Right, so if they believe in you, they can continue holding the company. If they don't believe, they can sell off that chunk of you know, whether that percentage or whatever was bought back, and they get it back in cash. And the reason why they do share buybacks instead of dividends is just because, at least in the US, although that might change soon, it's a lot more tax efficient, right? You don't have that 30% withholding. You don't have, I mean, they do have 40% of capital gains, but you know, that's based off a different base, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's why you see, especially the US tech companies, they much prefer doing share buybacks rather than announcing dividends.
Yeah, like Meta just did a share buyback, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They announced a huge share buyback.
Massive share buyback. A lot of stick was given to them because of the amount of people that they fired. But yeah.
40 billion.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite a lot.
Oh, no, but they're not doing it all in one quarter. They got authorized to do 40 billion worth of share buybacks over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Shell, obviously see some growth there. Coming back to it, obviously getting some good traction, right, with regards to their LNG and so on and so forth. How does 2023 look like for them? Is it investable?
Yeah, so I think that's there's kind of two bits about it that's quite interesting, right? So one is they don't actually see, they might see a boom, but they're not investing heavily into the boom. Right. So the typical, you know, commodity cycle is the commodity price goes up, everybody starts pumping into the commodity to explore more, to drill more, whatever, because good money, right? The commodity is worth so much money. There's an oversupply in the market, the price collapses, everybody goes bankrupt. Right. And then you restart again. Oh, there's not enough supply, price goes up. And then that's a typical commodity cycle. So what's been interesting about this commodity cycle is price go up, price came down a bit, nobody moved. Everybody said, I mean, most people said, we don't really want to drill more, we don't want to, you know, explore more, we don't want to produce more. We are just gonna keep our production as it is. We are going to even out the cycle. They didn't say this, but yeah, essentially, we don't want to go through the boom bust cycle again, right? This is crazy. We're just going to stick to it. So Shell kind of did the same. They forecasted about 23 to 27 billion in CapEx for 2023, and then confirmed their earnings. Yeah, we are keeping that range. We're not going to do anymore. So they are not massively investing into the boom. They are going, look, there's a boom. We have been here before. There will likely come a bust. So it's okay. We'll make money while we can. We'll return money to shareholders while we can. And everybody's happy. You know, let's just, it's BAU, right? Go up, go down. I will make more money if it goes up. I will make a bit less money when it goes down. But that's fine. You know, we are not going to. We are trying to fight the cycle, I think.
Fair enough.
And I think a second point is, you know, I mean, we talk about LNG and we say, oh yeah, you know, it feels great. But LNG prices spot prices have actually fallen quite a bit over the past 3 months. So for a period of time, they were going up to like $8. LNG prices in Europe, right? It was like $1 or $2 before the Ukraine invasion. They went up to $8 or $9, which is like 100% for a while as people were stocking up for winter, and now it's back at $3 or $4. So you know, it's been a crazy ride in LNG, and that hasn't really reflected in the stock price, right? Because you know, you don't see Shell going 800% up and then, you know, 50% down,
back down.
You
again
see them just like kind of chugging along. Oh yeah, I'm up 20%, I'm up 30%, and they have not come down, you know, at a similar range. And I think, you know, one is partially because they are not a pure exploration and producer, right? They are down the whole value chain. They are oil major, so there have been, you know, parts even when the spot prices have gone down. One is they're exposed to different commodities, so that's fine. Two is, you know, they have different parts of the value chain that are making a bit more money, like refiners and all that, which have helped, you know, cover up a bit of the loss. And three is they have so much of the market, of the spot market anyway. They can effectively hedge, or they can effectively, you know, trade it properly, compared to a few of the smaller producers, which might be more price takers. So yeah, that's, you know, that Shell. I think it's doing quite well, and it's also relatively cheap price to book, which is like 1.1. So of all right. their assets and all their gas fuels and all that, you know, net asset value, their share price at the current rate is 1.1,
which is amazing. Yeah. You don't really hear it nowadays.
I mean, you do, just not in the companies you cover, right? You hear it in, yeah, even CICT is like 1.3% price to book, right? Why would you buy? And okay, I guess they have higher dividends, but you know, and you are exchanged to Forex risk with Shell because they are listed overseas, and if the pound collapses, if the pound goes up, we are kind of screwed. But yeah, you know, you can kind of see why Shell seems very attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. And this year though, right? Any headwinds with regards to Shell commodities or anything like that?
There are always headwinds. One is maybe the cycle turns, right? And the cycle turns, you know, everybody gets whacked. Two is, you know, everybody saw, and I mean, energy prices are a huge topic, right? You know, we saw electricity prices rise. We saw electricity prices rise everywhere. Everybody, all the governments are taking the convenient route. Well, except Singapore government, because we are fair and above board. But all the other governments are taking the route of pointing their finger at the power producers and the oil majors and saying, hey guys, you're profiteering. You are profiteering off our people suffering. We need to make them suffer too. And, you know, you made too much money. Let me give you a windfall tax. Something like that. Let me charge you a windfall tax so that, you know, you give me more money and I'll use that to cover off whatever help I give my citizens. Which is kind of fair. Like, you see where they're coming from. Not really the oil majors' fault that prices went up. It wasn't that they pushed the prices up deliberately. It was more a function of supply and demand, but, you know, whatever, right? Government get money from private entity, not necessarily a bad thing. So yeah, I think that's probably going to be the big concern for all these energy companies. How much are they going to get taxed and how much will they actually have to pay out? So what Shell was saying was that for 2022, they paid $100 million in tax in the UK, right? They probably paid about $1 billion, a few billion in the entire world, but in the UK itself was $100 million. With the new windfall tax, they estimate this year's tax liabilities to be, like 2023 tax liabilities to be $500 million. So a five times increase in tax, right? I mean, if that goes across their whole earnings, that's probably not a good thing. I think it remains to be seen how much they will actually pay, and, you know, these people will always try to minimize tax. So yeah, we'll see.
Absolutely. Gotcha.
So I think that's cool. Going to be the big unknown.
Yeah, I think this was a great episode. We actually covered quite a bit of industries, if you think about it. Quite diverse in this one.
Yeah, and diverse geographies too. We are moving away from tech focus.
Yes. Yeah, because we have too, right? I mean,
I keep saying this, right? Every now is the time to buy. I mean, don't buy things like Bed Bath & Beyond or AMC. if you want to buy AMC, buy 8, right? That's at least the cooler ticker. But, you know, if you are a fundamentally strong tech company that is on the up and up, this is a blip, right? Cycles turn, cycles will turn back. You know, you don't necessarily need a zero interest rate environment to grow. I think people have just made too much of it, right? Lots of companies grew up well in high margin businesses in high margin industries in the 80s and the 90s. So tech is new, but businesses are businesses, right? History has shown a lot of this before. So buy the good, like, find the good companies, buy them, you know, hold on to them for the cycle, and you'll be fine, right? Like, people talk about buying undervalued businesses. They can still be undervalued after being down 90%, but your chances of finding an undervalued business are so much higher now than they were in 2021, right? So if you were happily buying in 2021 because they were undervalued and they had a huge TAM, then hey, you should be buying more now, you know? Where's your conviction, right? So buy, especially stocks that I already own, but I mean, like, yeah, for that, you, that aside, for you. You know. Yeah, for me. Right. Why do you think I'm here to pump? But you know, I mean that's not to pump that's illegal. But I think that's the key, right? You want to buy in the down cycle, so that when things move into the up cycle, you make profit. You don't just buy in the up cycle because that's when you catch the top.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Enough. Awesome, man. Thanks for that, Anthony. It was a good session.
Yeah, we need to be more positive. What other good news is there? Oh, budget coming up.
Yes, budget
hopefully
is
more
coming
goodies,
out.
More GST vouchers. $100 not enough.
Yeah. Budget is coming up next week, right? Coconuts, we hopefully will be covering a little bit of it on Valentine's Day.
Yes, on Valentine's we'll Day. That's where we'll be spending our evening. Right? Speech at 3:30, read the news, like 9 p.m. come and record. Oh, how is it going to affect the stock market? I don't know.
Yes, we are going to be talking. I don't know. We're going to be talking about it. Yeah. And hopefully we will be able to come up with a few things for you. We are covering the budget next week, so please tune in. We'll try and put a nice spin on it. But I think on the other hand, we are going to be rolling out a budget podcast right here in the Investor Network. So we can't wait for you to listen to it. We will be running a couple of episodes here. But for tonight, thank you again for listening. From Anthony and myself, we'll see you next week.
All right. Bye. See you guys. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode with me, Rakesh, and trust that you learned something today. If you enjoyed the session and want to be part of the banter, join our community Telegram group or follow us on social media. We also have a weekly newsletter to get a digest of the news we covered. To sign up, please click the description below. As always, we love your feedback. So share that with us at hello@thefinancialcoconut.com. Thanks, and stay safe.